Welcome to the Make the Day Awesome podcast, where we share stories of hope and inspiration to shine a light on a better tomorrow. But for today, I hope you choose to make the day awesome. Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Make the Day Awesome podcast. My name is Joshua Luther, and today we have special guest Jeff Giannacovo with us. Jeff, how's it going today?
It's going great. I mean, we already started off with the right name pronunciation, so good job.
We've already made
the day great.
I only said it like 20 times to make sure I didn't butcher it.
Yep.
So, Jeff, where are you from, boss?
So I live in Reading, Pennsylvania. I do business in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, about a half hour apart from each other.
Nice. And how long have you been in Pennsylvania?
So I moved here from Canada when I was 10. So 32 years now.
Nice. So do me a favor real quick. Tell everybody a little bit about you, what you do, and we'll jump in after your introduction here and talk about life.
Yeah. Yeah. So I've owned a couple businesses over the years as an adult, done a bunch of different things. I love the creation process. So I like to tell people I do business in your bedroom. I help smooth out problems between you and your spouse. I make your spouse happy and I can make you happy. I sell mattresses. So that's what I do. And, you know, I think when you look at it, like, I'm really committed to that. I am committed to helping people wake up happy. That's kind of our tagline. We have a guaranteed process to do that. The mattresses are just the instrument to give back into this world, into our community. I think we all in businesses have things we do. You know, if you sell insurance, you believe that having insurance in somebody's life, whatever that product is important because it protects them. And that's why you sell insurance. You know, you could choose to sell bedding and mattresses because it helps people be happy and be more productive, better parents, you know, better leaders, better community. That's why I do what I do. So that's my stick. But I love the creation process, and that's what brought me to owning a retail mattress store.
I can totally tell that opening to the mattress point was that had me going, dude. That's a setup for an adult store. Totally.
Well, it is, but you know, I started crafting that last year as, you know, we all kind of came out of COVID and getting back in person became a thing. And it's like, you know, I don't want to just say I own Gardner's Mattress and More in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. I want to really get people interested in what I do.
Yeah, there's nothing sexy about that.
No, there's really not.
I own a mattress store. Yeah, so does the guy down the street. Like, give me a mattress with zero down.
Here's how unsexy it is. My wife couldn't tell you what mattress she sleeps on. And we sleep on a kick butt mattress. Yeah, that's how unsexy what I do is. Like, even my wife, who... our mattress has tremendously helped her health with MS. She can't tell you what it is. She loves it. But she can't tell you what it is.
Oh man, that's crazy. So let's learn a little bit more about you. I want to dive into where Jeff grew up, where Jeff came from, like,
yep,
life story, like the early years before we got into all the good juicy stuff.
Yeah. So, I mean, born in Canada, hockey kid, farm kid. I mean, where I was born was kind of central Ontario. So if you think of Toronto, go like 3 hours west into the middle of the land peninsula that's in between all the lakes.
Okay.
Flat, and farms and more farms. Riding dirt bikes before I could ride bicycles. I've broken this hand so many times in the pre-show. We were talking about Cub Scouts. This is my Cub Scout salute. I'm showing it on video to Josh here. You can't obviously see it. You're listening to it, but my right hand is all gnarled. I can't get the three fingers up to make the salute. And when I was a Cub leader, I couldn't, they admonished me for my improper salute. And I'm like, this is the hand. Like, when I pull the pinky down, it gnarls everything else. If I let it up, they all go together, but the pinky and the ring finger on my right hand work together. Oh, wow. Anyway. So dirt bikes, you know, typical, like, you know, if you think of Americana youth upbringing. I had that as a kid. And then we moved to the States because of NAFTA. NAFTA actually really impacted my father's business in trucking. So it made more sense to be stateside.
Okay.
So we moved here when I was 10, and that was really tough. I mean, as a kid, it was really tough. You know, I didn't know anybody. You know, I was in that sixth grade going into seventh grade year. It was very difficult to assimilate and make friends. Really was rough, to the point where, like, suicidal. Wow. And it's why I'm an Eagles football fan today, because my friend at the time introduced me to Eagles football and introduced me to the game of football.
Okay.
And so I'm like, yeah, somebody's talking to me. This is great. I look back, like, he could have been a fanatic about cricket or ping pong, and I probably would be, like, you know, the top fan of the top cricket team in the world. I don't know. It became so instrumental for me, that connection to something. It was very cool. It's why I'm still to this day an Eagles fan. And I know you're in South Florida, and I know the Bucks just whooped up on my team the week we recorded this, but we weren't even supposed to be playing January ball. So that's the bright side I look at.
So I will be 100% honest here. I haven't followed much football since the start of COVID and everything fell apart. Like, I catch little snippets, like, Dallas is doing good this year. Like, I ain't seen Dallas do good since I was like a teenager. You know, Deion Sanders
says as an Eagles fan, the week we recorded this podcast, Dallas Cowboys did the most Dallas Cowboys thing and just killed their season and any chance of moving on with, like, the dumbest game ending play in history. And we got a lot of friends who are Dallas Cowboys fans, so I'm going to leave it at that. But as an Eagles fan, I love that little dig in.
Oh, dude, I tell you what, our pastor at church, he's a Texas boy, and yep. He was rocking his Dallas gear Sunday.
He ain't rocking it anymore.
I think he'll be on vacation this Sunday.
At least from the gear.
Yes.
So, yeah, for me, I mean, circling back, I mean, for me, it was something as a kid. I believe it was life-saving, being able to connect to something, being able to be brought in. Then it's interesting, you know, I think the lesson there is you just never know the journey somebody's walking right beside you.
Yeah.
And so it's important that we try to pay attention as best we can, get out of our own way, and maybe seek to give to others.
Yeah. And, you know, that transition, like, I'm sitting here thinking about it, 10 years old, moving from Canada to the States, and not just like the border of Canada into New York, where you're close, or like
right.
from one town to the next town over. We're talking, there's probably what, 600 miles, 800 miles between A and B. Like,
yeah, it was about 600 miles. I mean, the biggest difference was, like, living where we lived, like, your neighbor was far, you know, couple miles away.
Yeah.
Driving. Riding my bike to the convenience store here was like, that was like Disney World. Because literally, like, you made shorter riding the bus to school, which was an hour long trip, morning and afternoon.
Oh, wow.
Short of that, like, you didn't really leave your house. It was very intentional, because it was a trip.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a whole to do. Here it was, you could ride your bike to the convenience store, go to the swimming pool, the community pool, go to the park, you know, so it was very interesting.
So after that, you moved to Reading, right?
Yeah. So my wife was from this area. So where I do business, where I move and where I live now, about a half hour apart, from each other, and my wife's family's from this area, and she's just the gem. Really took me from a misspent youth into leading into a really rough adulthood. And when I met her, I was kind of doing the George Costanza thing, do the opposite of everything you're doing. Because I was really going down a bad path, crime, just not good stuff. and not good decisions as a young adult. And it took some pretty intense situations for me to realize if you don't stop, you're gonna end up dead. I mean, that's just how it's gonna happen. And so I said, enough of this. I'm gonna really try to do the opposite of it. And that's how I met my wife. I was getting my life back together, focusing on myself. And I walk into a bank, and she's like the loan person. And so that's how we met.
Nice. So how old were you guys when you guys met?
I was youngin'. So I was 20 and she was 23.
Like the motor women.
I do. The funniest thing, on our first date, we go, like, I picked the restaurant. It was a restaurant that I knew, and I knew ownership. I knew it was like a friendly place. So I just sit down and I order a Manhattan, and she's like freaking out because she's about as straight laced as they come, still is. And she's freaking out. I'm like, just, it's all right. This is what I do. I know these people. She's like, but you can't legally, this is against the law. I said, I know. I'm okay with it. And we proceed. And there was many a times where I, you know, because of who I was able to like do little things like that, but not go back and revert. So,
yeah, no, that's a good thing. So, I my first date with my wife, we went to Eaton Park after work. It was like 10 o'clock at night.
Oh,
and
grabbed Eaton coffee. Park.
Yes. Oh, dude. Yeah, that's right. Oh, Pennsylvania. Dude, I love Eaton
Park. Yeah.
So we went. I was working for a company called ActionLink at the time, and we were like third-party salespeople. We would go promote products for other brands inside mm-hmm. major big box retailers. And I met Vanessa at the Best Buy I was working at. I was the Belkin guy at the time, and she still refers to it this day. I was the Belkin guy with the cute butt. And we went on our first date, and I met with the guy who was running the other Best Buy across town. I think it was in Monroeville. And we met up and we had coffee to dissect afterwards. And she ended up coming along and he was cool with it. But at the end, he ended up buying coffee for us with his P card. He's like, I'll just put it on my P card. I'm not worried about it. And to this day, she still holds that against me.
Gee,
he didn't even pay for our first date.
Yeah. Eaton Park, man. There was one in Lancaster. It was like the hangout. And so at the time, this predates meeting my wife, but I don't know. I roll in. It's probably like 1 a.m. I roll in on a motorcycle, and there was a gal. We were like oil and water, our own unique ways and brands of trouble. We probably should have been like Bonnie and Clyde, a relationship to last decades, right?
Yeah.
But we were just so, it was oil and water. And like I said, our own, but when we met up, I'll just leave it at that. Mm-hmm. So I roll in like 1 a.m. on this motorcycle. She's with her friends. We end up leaving on the bike together. And then she's like, well, take me back there because I was with somebody. I said, what do you mean you were with somebody? She's like, well, I was actually on a first date. This is the kind of trouble I used to get into. Yeah.
Okay.
So for the purposes of the podcast, and I'll just leave it at that and let the listeners fill in the blanks. But yeah, that Eaton Park, man, that was just like the wave of memories of youth hanging out there, just being a shitbird, if I can say that.
Yeah, dude, you're good.
That was, those were memories.
Eaton Park or Denny's, whatever one was. Actually, it was Denny's if Grandma Bobby was working. She was our Denny's grandma. And after the clubs, we would all pack in there. But if she wasn't working, it was Eaton Park.
Yep.
Both equally good. Come on, dude. Some grilled stickies a la mode.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, come on, somebody.
Yep.
Yes. So, yes, definitely remember 1 a.m. runs to Eaton Park.
Yep.
So you got in a lot of trouble as a youth. And mm-hmm. now, mind you, It's what we're about. We're about sharing that life story so that people can see, hey, we're not the only ones. You're not the only one going through these situations. Other people have, and we paved the road to make it easier for you to come out of, right?
Yep.
So where did that road take you?
Take me at the time or take at, me?
At the time, like,
yeah.
What was the turn? What took you to the turning point where you said this is enough and you started building businesses and you started, you said earlier, focusing on you?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I was very good at creating the aurora of everything's all right with Jeff. Good grades. I worked part-time as a kid at a diner, which really is where I had like kind of an introduction to the, you know, criminal, bad, seedy people in my life.
Okay.
You know, so I would do favors for them, like run cars, run packages, things like that. So I did all of that like as a sophomore, late sophomore, junior, and senior in high school. My senior year of high school, I was basically homeless, couch surfing. When I share this with my mother today, she still is in awe of any of this stuff that went on because she had zero clue. The reason I was out of the house that senior year of high school was because of her decisions and the man that she was with, who was just not a good person. And we were not able to be around each other, without a fight breaking out. And like full on fight. So that's kind of how my high school career, if you will, that's what I did. The turning point was a gun to the head because I just ran up against the wrong people at the wrong time and they wanted what I had. And, they viewed what I had as more valuable than my life. And I'm like, this car ain't worth it. It wasn't even a nice car, but it was a car they wanted. And, so that was that. I'm like, this is not worth it. So when we started out, like I was doing the opposite of everything. That's what I mean. Like, let's not do things that get a gun pointed at your head.
Yeah, no, that's a good idea.
Yeah, exactly.
That is a really good idea.
Yep.
So after that, right, we turn.
Yep.
We hit that point. Now we're gonna build into the success. We're gonna build into big ticket life and the mattress stores and the other businesses that you. So what was the first business that you jumped into building?
So it was actually a mobile DJing business.
Okay.
Yeah. So built that up. That went well. My wife and I, we kind of dated on the weekdays because of that. Cause I was always busy on the weekends.
Of course.
At first for myself and then for the team that I built. So that was fun. Very stressful. I still to this day will wake up in a panic. It's always a Sunday morning, like at 3 a.m. in the morning, with some terrible bridezilla, groomzilla, not playing the right version of Baby's Got Back or, you know, what was the song at the time? The Daddy's Little Girl, Angel Wings. Kisses. That's it. Not playing the right version of the 27 versions that were out there, which like you can feel my pain. Like, I don't know what bothered me more, the gun to the head or having to buy 27 versions of Butterfly Kisses. And like, this isn't like today in 22 where you buy a song for 99 cents. No, you went to Coconuts and bought a CD for $22.99 for one song. And then you never used it again because it was version 26, but the next one wanted version 17. So that was fun business till it wasn't. Through that, I met some people that were in building products. I had a stint very briefly after high school in construction. So I started selling building products.
Okay.
And I did very well. I mean, this was like a time I'm doing like the path for opposite has worked. I've got a great girlfriend. Life is good. I can go to bed at night without any worries, you know. So life is good, and I lean into it real heavy, and I start knocking dead these big national accounts for windows and doors for this building products company.
Okay.
And we get along, and they say, you know, it's time to move to the next level. I said, are you sure we want to do that? Because margins at that level aren't going to be what we're normally accustomed to. They're like, yeah, it's time. We're into it. We get 6 months into it. They're like, yeah, we don't like these margins. We're eliminating this role altogether. Goodbye.
Damn. Talk about a wake-up call.
Yeah. So I'm reading the newspaper, kind of looking, and I find this little 1-inch by 1-inch ad. I still remember it, can still picture it. Sales/service rep, call Ed Pine, who Ed became my business partner. And we built a very good 1099. So we were the business. I came on board with him, and we exploded and built a national sales team representing companies in the home furnishings and in the bedding business.
Nice.
Yeah. So I was flying all over the country, opening up accounts, representing these companies. It was really good, again, till it wasn't. So I got married, and then the first 3 months after we were married, I go on a tear where in 4 months, I spent 10 nights in my own bed. And my wife says to me, hey, you know, like, I love you and all, but this isn't what I signed up for, and this is different. And then, so we had that conversation, worked through that. 6 months later, that Thanksgiving, the major company we represented just goes bankrupt. On Thanksgiving, they were based in Canada. They're a Toronto company. Uh-huh. Based in Canada. So Thanksgiving Day for them is in October. Ours is obviously in November. I get a call, and they're like, yeah, we're out of business. I said, nah, come on, look, stop. I don't want, it's a holiday. I'm off. I told you. No, this is very serious. You need to leave the table. We need to have this conversation. So they were done like that overnight. And we were exposed 6 figures of commission plus all expenses with another 6 figures of commission that was to be paid in December. I mean, we were exposed major. I had to go stock shelves at a grocery store to put food on the table.
Jesus. I can't fathom how that happens literally overnight. Like, there had to be some run up to.
Well, I mean, I think.
Precursor that.
Yeah. I mean, look, I graduated high school with a 3.97 GPA. My teachers knew me as the good student, the responsible student. Meanwhile, I was running stolen cars through the neighborhood in the middle of the night.
You'll never know.
You know, I mean, you know, I mean, that's, so these businesses, they can present that story and that success till they can't. In this instance, what happened is the equity fund that owned it did what equity funds typically do. They'd come in, they took the cash, they sold the assets, they made no reinvestments. And all of a sudden, one day, it just comes to a grinding halt. The machinery's broken for the last time. It can't be fixed. It has to be reinvested in. In a mattress manufacturing facility, a piece of equipment, the cheapest one is often 15 grand. The most expensive stuff that you really need is $250,000 to $500,000.
Oh, wow.
So, and every factory needs two or three of them, small ones. So that's how it happens. It just stops. And I think that's very appropriate to personal life, right? Like, you were just at Christmas with your wife, and now it's January 18th and you're divorced. Everything looked good. You got the pictures to prove it, but you're smiling over the sadness, you know?
Max. Nope. I still, every now and again, I come by the pictures of when I was at my absolute worst. And one of my church moms called me out that day and was like, hey, what's wrong?
Yep.
Nothing. Everything's good. No, your eyes tell me more.
Yep.
And like, she cut me down that day.
Yep. Yep.
Like a hot knife through butter.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so, I mean, like it, you see it and it goes back. I shared it earlier. Like you never know who you're standing beside that's got some problems. And if you can, if I really think in this world, we need to listen more and be more, this is going to sound weird, have our equipment tuned to receive, like just be plugged in to pay attention.
Yeah.
Right. I think that's important, whether that's you listen from whatever higher being you believe in, you better listen to your family, your kids, your spouse, your employees, your partners. You know, it's an exercise I really have to work hard at because I like to talk, which you can maybe gather.
There's nothing wrong with liking to talk, but yes, we do need to slow down and listen and be able to receive, which is an area that I have. You know, I just actually, if you don't mind me sharing this with you.
Yeah.
I was clearing out our storage bin because we're going to downsize and get rid of stuff that we haven't used and needed. And I came across, we did a marriage retreat, me and my wife, a few years back. And I came across these letters, and in one of them, it had this section. I thought it was so amazing. Like, and I know there's going to be a Facebook post that comes from it just because it's that powerful, but it says, now this was my wife's letter. She got this letter, and it reads specifically, just like me, my husband is seeking some happiness for his life. Just like me, my husband is trying to avoid suffering in his life. Just like me, my husband has known sadness, loneliness, and despair. Just like me, my husband is seeking to fulfill his needs. Just like me, my husband is learning about life. Just like me, my husband is a child of God and loved by God. And like, as I read it the first time, and then I snapped to and was like, oh, like we get so focused on ourself, like that we forget everything else that's going on. We get into these zones.
Yeah. But, yeah. 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 I mean, that's pretty powerful. We need to pay attention to others around. And really, I think when we do that, when you open up that nature to give and hear and listen and tune into what other people are going through, it's cathartic and it helps you. It really does. Yep. That's what I believe.
And what you learn, what you grasp from me might not be what you get from you, right?
Right.
And we might be saying the same thing, but it's received by different people.
Yep.
Which, you know, leads us into Apex, right?
Mm-hmm.
Your Apex brother. How long have you been in?
Since like May or June of last year.
Okay.
Yep.
So that's about the same time I jumped in too.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's like, I was just sharing with a friend of mine, actually a business partner in another business that I have. This morning, he's like, so this Apex thing seems like it's like you're really drinking the Kool-Aid. I said, well, I know from the outside looking in, it can seem that way. But I will tell you, I mean, him and I have swam in other, what I call like herds. So you got a figurehead like Ryan Stueman. There are figureheads like Tony Robbins, Jim Rohn, Michael Gerber, you know, they're all over the place in every facet of life. It's kind of like it used to be, you knew what was on every station because you had three stations, right? Today, you don't know what's on channel 1027 because you never get to the thousands. So these things are out there. It doesn't mean that they're weird. It doesn't mean you just don't swim in that pond, so to say. So I said, what's unique about Apex is there is a connection. And there is that willingness to give, unlike anything else that I've ever seen. I mean, you know, you've probably experienced that with the people who've said yes to joining you on the show.
Yep.
I know I have. Just me reaching out to people. There's been reception there unlike anything I've ever seen. Yeah, I in fact feel I feel that I'm a successful person for a number of reasons. But I feel vastly inferior in that room of Apex executives because I'm not the funding guy. I'm not the AdWords expert. I am not, you know, the insert the fill in the blank, right? Like I'm the mattress guy, but that's all right. I have a lot of experience in a lot of different facets of life that I can just be open to hearing people, what they're going through, and give back in that way and try to help in that regard.
But yeah. And that's the thing, like just the mattress guy doesn't work. Just the mattress guy doesn't work. You are so much more between your lessons and the stories that you have to share. Like we are our own product. No matter which way you cut it, it's just being able to open up and share authentically to connect with people and make that happen and teach them, which you're doing now with Big Ticket Life as well.
Mm-hmm.
Right, working with business owners, helping them set their foundation.
So to real quick, just circle back, close the loop as a manufacturer's rep.
So
I got into retail because, you know, we rebuilt that business, was very successful at the height of being a manufacturer's rep. I was selling $15 million worth of product a year with an AUSP of about average unit price of about $87. So like I was selling cheap stuff to a lot of people and everybody knew it. It was nobody had any disillusion about it. We were selling entry level product and we sold a lot of stuff. In 2012, I sold the most, but I made more than I did in 2008. And that 4 year span was just fraught with, it felt like I was battling for every dollar I was owed with these factories. The tide really turned because it was right in that era of economic recession. It was good because there were retailers shifting merchandising strategy to lower price points because of the recession. So I was primed for ball, right? Like it was my time at the plate, but dealing with those factories was rough. And it was rough. So I said, I need to get off the road. I need to have control. I need to do something for myself and build equity for myself. And I bought Gardner's, which was a customer of mine.
Okay.
And that was 11 years ago. So two things, we'll touch on the equity because that's really what Big Ticket Life is about building equity in your business. So you can do life and business on your terms, but you touched on something about how we're the product, right? Yeah. And for anybody listening, like if you don't, what Josh just said is very smart. Like if you don't think that's true and you're doubting yourself, I've got one name for you. Kim Kardashian.
Damn straight.
What does Kim Kardashian create, produce, fulfill, problem solve? She sells a lot of stuff by endorsement.
Yeah.
But she's in the business of Kim Kardashian. And I'm saying this with the utmost respect. I'm not saying it to knock the person or the family. They are in the business of being a Kardashian. They are in the business of everybody wanting to be like them. Now, I'm not going to comment on whether being like them is a good or a bad thing. That's you listening, you decide. But the reality is when Josh said you are the product, there is no more better example than that. And Big Ticket Life is about doing life and business on your terms, and how you do that as far as business goes is you Kardashian the business. You become that authority in your market, however big your market is. Maybe that's a 5 mile radius, because you live in a population dense area and that's as far as you want to send your HVAC crews. I don't know, right? Whatever your market is, you need to be that Kardashian in your market. You've got to be that expert and that authority. And only behind being a Kardashian, like if you can't be that celebrity, you need to be an authority. And I work with business owners to create that authority through what I call growth assets. So like books and tip sheets and buyer's guides and things like that. So that's a big aspect of Big Ticket Life, doing life and business on your terms, creating experience in the business. mm-hmm. is very important. I think if you're a business owner, that's like just looking, like if you're saying, well, look, my customers come to me, they pay me, and I give them exactly what they want in the product, and you're just making an exchange and it's transactional, you're losing. Like you can get that anywhere. Costco yeah. does that great. Like Costco, you can do that and you can kind of have lunch because you're going around to all the little samples for the buffet, right?
Yeah. Dude, I can't. Like Swedish meatballs just popped in my head now.
Yeah, yeah. Like that's actually an experience above the on top of the transaction. So like if you're not looking to put experience, an experience comes from how they engage with your website. Like what's your website look like? You know, what's your app like? What's the story you're telling in your advertising? And what are your marketing messages saying? Which kind of goes back to where we started about how I do business in your bedroom. Like that was an experience. You laughed.
Yeah.
Right. It wasn't just somebody else in the row of people introducing themselves at the BNI meeting. Right. It was a moment to laugh and enjoy.
Yes.
And those moments of experience, they really exist everywhere in a business. You know, when we make a delivery in our retail business, we literally put a red carpet down on your porch and we vacuum nice. Under your nightstands and under where your old bed was.
Okay.
Because we realized actually our delivery crew was being held up because people say, oh my gosh, oh, I'm so embarrassed. You know, and trust me, the dust under the bed is like the most G-rated thing my guys have seen under the bed. But the point being is customers would say, oh, I got a vacuum. Then they got to get the vacuum cleaner out. They got to put the pens away that they find, the 7 socks they lost, the sneaker, you know. And we just said, well, this is something people want. We've already got cordless tools on the truck. We can add a vacuum, a battery vacuum onto that suite of tools.
Absolutely.
And we can do it for them. So we do the chocolates and the gifts after sale, but that one, that's one of those experiences I talk about. And then the last thing that I focus on, there's 3 big things, the growth assets, experiences, and then E equals MC squared, right? The theory, yeah. That theory where we put mass into momentum and make it move. And you only do that in business where you've got, a business that appears very simple, but when you start peeling back the layers, you've got complexity. And it's good complexity. It's complexity that people understand and can execute on. Your team can do that. You remove yourself as the owner, so you're not doing everything. And your team does it. They know the standard. And your customers say, that was the most pleasurable experience I've had buying your thing. You know?
Dude, that the cleaning under the bed. So, I mean, like, first off, what do they do with all the stuff? Do they just like push it into a pile?
You mean like the pens and the socks? Yeah. I mean, they pick it up and just set it like on the nightstand or put it on the dresser. But
it's that extra memorable touch point that just sets it up. And it's like, hey, these people are freaking amazing, right? That's what yep. leads to. Right. They don't come back because, hey, this guy gave me a deal on a bed.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that exists everywhere.
People don't go to Disney and Universal just for roller coasters and characters and costumes.
I like to say about Disney, like, you know, one of their slogans is the happiest place on earth.
Mm-hmm.
In July, you know, South Central Florida.
No.
Is like the furthest definition I would have for the happiest place on earth. Like, you know, one step outside, you're drenched in sweat. You're standing in lines. You're paying $27 for a hot dog.
All right.
You know, you're scorching in the sun. It rains at 3:00 every day. You get a brief respite from the temperature at 312. And then at 315, you're sweating your ass off again. Everybody says it's the happiest place on earth.
Definitely do not make that trip in July. We did that with, our nephew. He was turning 13 and we brought the whole family down to go to Disney. We bought like 7-day park hopper tickets. I might've had a really good plug with where I worked at. And we got a VRBO house off site, and we all stayed there. And I kid you not, we used like 2 days on the Hopper tickets because they were just like, nope, not us. And they're from Pittsburgh, right?
Right.
Like that's where they spent all their life.
Yeah, we have humidity up here, but that level, that's a different phase of humidity down there.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and people might listen to this, but yeah, well, I go in December. Well, great. But, aside from the temperature, there's a lot of realities that don't change. Mm-hmm. Like for me personally, I don't enjoy being around crowds and crowds of people.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's innate in human experience to be enjoying things in big crowds of people, but they make it happy. And it's all those things they overmanage. And it's the fact that it's so complex. There's so much depth to what's done. Mm-hmm. And the reasons why it's done and the expectation. That's why I like to relate that as E equals MC squared, because everybody understands that. A lot of people can't even throw back what it means, but they understand it was game changing. And yeah. when we can get somebody that I work with, get their mind around that, you must get out. You must plug in these systems, these processes, so that your team understands it, executes, and your customers say, this was like incredible. This was so freaking easy. And you give them so many things to talk about. Like you say about the vacuum cleaner stuff. Like I can sell somebody an $8,000 mattress, and we do routinely. And I'd love for them to talk about the product, but they talk about that vacuum cleaning thing, or they talk about the sea salt caramels we send them in the mail and the two other gifts that come later. They talk about the little coffee mug they leave with as a little gift. Because people swipe their card for $8,000, $5,000, whatever, and they leave with a paper invoice.
Yeah.
Like that's not great.
Nope.
But if they leave with a little gift, there's a better feeling there. And those are the kinds of things that I work with business owners on, like just to really stack all of these things into the business where we create a machine that doesn't take them over. Because the other side is you got to do life on your, you do business on your terms, but it's got to reward your life. So you got to lead yourself, your family, your community, and enjoy owning the business and take those benefits out and do something with them.
Yeah. So I was thinking about that complexity. Have you seen that new movie from Disney, Encanto?
I've heard of it. I've not seen it.
So there's Disney specifically has this specific shade of green that is so unattractive to the eye, right? They paint all their employee walkway areas with to make them not noticeable.
Okay.
So turns out Encanto, the we don't talk about Bruno, if you've heard the song yet. Bruno was living in the background of the house, and his cloak that he wore was that same don't look at me green.
Mm.
Like the complexity behind that they have a specific color shade to keep people from looking at areas that are in plain sight.
Yep. Out of all the things I know at Disney, I did not know that one.
Yeah.
That's very interesting. I'll
send you some more info on that because it's pretty dope. Like when they're under construction and whatnot, that's what they use to just drab it out. It's like a different version of olive green. And like anybody who's seen the military uniform knows how drab that is.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it makes perfect sense. So that's brilliant is really what it is. So you think about the intention behind that, like we could have picked any color, your lawyers would have said, it's gotta be bright orange, fluorescent orange or yellow.
Safety yellow,
right? Because we'll get sued. My God, we can't paint a color that blends in because somebody might step in the pothole that was painted drab olive green, right? But the reality is their eye was taken over to Mickey or to the castle or to Space Mountain, and they walked that way and not into the day. That's brilliant. But see, that's the kind of intention that needs to exist in people's businesses. And if once you get away from that everyday, what I call CHEVO, chief everything officer, once you get away from that behavior, your mind opens up to, oh, I can fix this problem with some weirdo green color. It's paint in the can, so it doesn't matter what color it is. It's all the same labor to put it down, but the benefit is amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's smart.
And getting back to that chief everything officer, like I know I've experienced it myself in the couple businesses that I've had up and running where I literally have to solve every problem. So when we're in that problem solving state, we can't look at bigger problems that are required to stretch us and allow us to grow. Right.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, when you're stuck in the doing of everything, you have no opportunity to grow. You really have no foundation.
Yeah.
You're just responding. You know, and I would say there's a balance there. And I said earlier, I felt inferior about being in the room with Apex, mm-hmm. right? Because when you're struggling as a Chivo, you're not being respectful of your time. You're not guarding your time. And that's a bad thing because time is precious. It's finite.
Yeah.
So it goes back to the other things that I help business owners with, those growth assets, the experience, and the E equals MC squared way of thinking about business. When you set that right, you're not responding to those fires. Your time becomes very valuable. Now, how you choose to give it, which is what Apex is all about, becomes very powerful. And for me, it was only recent that I really kind of clicked in my head that, because I've been very guarded with my time over the years, but I haven't been very giving of my time as best I can. And that's changed. But it's only in getting away from those years ago, those Chivo-like behaviors, that you have that foundation to give time. Does that make sense?
Makes sense.
You know, when I say give time, like being open to hearing other people, if you're so wrapped up in your own stuff, you can't possibly receive anything, which means you can't give anything. Right.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying open up, go set up a calendar link and open up your calendar for anybody and everybody to get on it. I'm saying be intentional about where you give, but make those deposits into relationships because it will pay off. There is no doubt in my mind. I mean, you've seen it, I'm sure.
Oh, absolutely.
Within Apex, I've seen it already. Since starting my podcast, it's a pretty incredible mind shift when you do seek to give in a way, but you have to be set up to do it.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. Like I feel inferior from a financial success standpoint. I'm not quite to the, you know, 7-8 level, figure level, or even upper sixes, whatever. I'm not there yet. My mindset is $1 million mindset.
Right.
Like I've grown so strong over this last year, thanks to this community, that I'm there. I'm successful there. I'm successful in my knowledge. I'm embracing the stuff that I've learned, the things that I'm passionate about. Financially, not totally winning, but you know what? It will come. Keep giving, be open to receive. And that's where I had my biggest hang up, was being open to receive.
Yeah.
And yeah, they've definitely helped with that.
Yeah. I read something, I forget where I read it. It might have been on Reddit. It might have been on Facebook. It might have been a book.
You might have read it on Reddit.
Yeah. the dad jokes can be aplenty. A good way to practice receiving things is when somebody offers you a bottle of water. Or, you know, you're at a breakfast meeting and they offer a donut. Accept it. Even if like you're ready, like you're already like 5 minutes away from peeing your pants, like take the bottle of water and take a few sips. No one's going to sit there and track how much you drank of it, you know, but it's just that simple little exercise. You know, like I don't take compliments well. I actually go into this like self-deprecating, funny guy thing. And it's really, when you look at it, it's really not good behavior.
No.
Because that person has recognized something positive and they're trying to acknowledge that, and you're almost diminishing it. Right?
Yeah.
Whereas the real moment is, hey, I really appreciate that you noticed that about me. Thanks. I've been working hard at it. I like that you took the time to notice. So thanks. Like, see, I think if we had more of that from everybody in our world, we'd have a little different world. Right.
I can agree with this,
you know? So yeah, that's that little exercise, like practicing receiving something, even as simple as a bottle of water. Life's all about habits, right? I mean, yeah, that's what your empowerment journal is about. It's all about setting up those habits, which, by the way, I'm looking to introduce that to my team as we find new ways to lead and inspire moving forward.
Dude, that's freaking awesome. Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. It's just a function of I have to properly lead it and implement it. Otherwise, they'll look at it as just another thing Jeff brings and then he forgets about. Right. Which that's as an owner, I've done less and less of that in recent years. It was a major fault before. I mean, building those habits in that way. Another one is like, if you're somebody that forgets people's names, when you go to a restaurant, listen to the waiter or waitress's name. You're so intent on getting your drink order in, you know, ordering the, what was your favorite thing at Eaton Park? The stickies.
Oh, the grilled stickies. Yeah.
Yeah. You're so intent on getting that grilled sticky order in, right?
Yep.
You just blow right by Julia's name and some people don't even, they can't even recognize their waiter or waitress, you know? Yeah. So it's like, just take that step back, which is really a listening exercise, which is really a receiving exercise, which really sets the table to be more giving. That's what I think. I'm no expert, but I'm sure trying to improve in these regards at a personal level.
I try to use the three touch point rule. So when I meet somebody and they tell me their name, oh, hey, so-and-so, how are you doing? And then use it a couple more times and hopefully it clicks at that point. Most of the time it does. Servers I'm pretty good with. I've always been really respectful, like even so much as pre-bussing my tables.
Working in restaurants, that's one of those things that I'm, my wife too, she was a waitress in college and in high school. And we're always like kind of stacking the plates. Whatever scrap or trash gets on the top plate, and the silverware in the cup.
Yeah.
But get the lemon out because you don't want to have them pour the lemon down the drain. Like it's really like sad. And then like we've done the job and we still have to pay the bill, you know? So.
Yeah. So Jeff, you brought up earlier that you have a podcast. I want to touch on your community real quick because you are building your big ticket life community. You have the podcast, you have Facebook group.
No Facebook group as of yet.
Okay.
So you can connect with me through personal Facebook, Jeff Giannakovo, which I'm sure
we'll put it in the bio.
Yeah. You'll be able to spell it out in the bio and, the bigticketlife.com. If you just go there, you can see the podcast. If you go to the bigticketlife.live, you can, that'll take you right to YouTube. And if you hit that up on Tuesdays at noon, typically you'll be able to watch it live. We broadcast it out as an actual show on Facebook, on LinkedIn, and on YouTube simultaneous. So any device that gets those apps, living room TV included, you can watch the show. It's also an audio podcast, but it's really about, at its core, creating that equity for a business owner to really scale themselves, become that investor. We've got the methodologies we talked about, but it's fundamentally about really doing business and life on your terms. It's about being successful so you can help raise the level of success for everybody around you.
Beautiful. Well, Jeff, I appreciate you, brother.
Yeah, thank you, man. This was
absolutely
great.
Absolutely great having you on the show. And hey, guys, as always, we choose to make our day awesome. We hope you do too. Have an awesome day, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.